Bonjour, hello, and bienvenue. Welcome to the Good Life France podcast. I'm your host, Janine Marsh. I was born in London, but this year I'm celebrating 20 years of having a house in France, or rather a home in France, though I have loved France for a lot longer than that, since I was a teenager, in fact, and visited Paris on a school exchange trip. I'm a writer, and I'm also the editor of the Good Life France website and magazine, and I'm a maid to way too many animals. When I'm not looking after them, I travel all around France, exploring the culture, traditions, food, wine, and much more. And I absolutely love to share what I discover with you on this podcast, alongside my podcast partner, Olivier Geoffrey.
Bonjour tout le monde, a super big welcome to this podcast, all who are new to it and all who have been with us longer. Apparently, we have listeners in 148 countries now. That's just astonishing, isn't it?
It's amazing. I'm flabbergasted, really. It's speechless almost, but that doesn't happen very often, so I'm not really speechless. But seriously, thank you so much to everyone listening. A huge, huge thank you to everyone who shares us.
Right, it's time to get this new episode kicked off. Let's take a look at what's on the agenda today. The Good Life France podcast. Everything you want to know about France and more. With Janine Marsh and Olivier Geoffrey.
So we're going to be talking travel in France today, Ollie. It's that time of the year when people are planning holidays in France, wondering where to go maybe, what to see and how to get there.
That sounds like a brilliant topic to me, especially as I've just moved back to France from the UK to sunny Lyon in the south. And I too am planning to travel more and discover or rediscover the Hexagone, as we French call France.
France is a land of legendary landmarks known all over the world, from the Eiffel Tower in Paris to the blooming lavender fields of Provence. And around 90 million visitors arrive in France each year, making it head and shoulders the most visited country in the world. Now, visitors are seduced by the culture, the history, the architecture, food and wine. They are beguiled by the many pleasures of France, just as I am, and once is never enough. But it's not just visitors that love to visit France. Staycations are really popular with the French, and around 80% of the French people take holidays in their own country. How about you, Ollie? Will you be taking a holiday in France this year?
Of course I will, Janine. Of course, the difficulty is to choose where, to be honest with you. Being new in Lyon, we now have a brand new perimeter of destinations to discover and so many possibilities. Some of the best parts of France are just a few hours away. The Beaujolais, Burgundy, the old volcanoes of Auvergne, the French Alps, even Marseille. So we have started a kind of debate in my family. Like, who wants to go where? It's not finalized yet, but we have also decided that we will not visit our families this summer. The reason being that for the first time in 20 years for me and 30 years for Christelle, my partner, we live all in the same country. So guess what? Family will come to us for once. So what about you, Janine? I'm fairly certain you will be holidaying in France, right?
You know what? I haven't had a holiday in years. Seriously. We've got so many animals, it's just impossible for me and my other half to get away at the same time. So, you know, when we had three dogs and three cats, we could pretty much persuade or bribe one of our kids to babysit them. But now we've got four dogs, seven cats, three ducks, four geese, 28 chickens, and the kids are strangely busy all the time. So Mark, my husband, is happy to stay at home. He's a real homebod. I love to travel, so I go everywhere solo, and I pretty much go somewhere new in France every month. And it is work, but it's sort of like a holiday. Although if Mark is listening, it's not a holiday. Absolutely not a holiday. It's work. This year, I've got such a lot planned. I'm going to the snowy French Alps next week to meet some husky dogs and walk in the snow and make a snow angel. And I've never been to the Alps in winter when it snowed, so I'm really excited about that. And then in February, I'm going to Menton in the south on the border with Italy for the Lemon Festival. And then from there, I go into the Gulf of Saint-Tropez. In March, I'm going to visit Alain Ducasse's patisserie school in Paris. He's like the most famous chef in France. And then I'm going to his pastry school in a place called Isingo in the Auvergne-Rhône Alps. And then I'm going to spend some time in Lyon, where I hope to meet up with you, Ollie.
Oh, so yes,
be
please.
Really nice.
Cool.
Yeah, it will be. And then in April, I'm off to Picardy to visit a new centre dedicated to the French language, Oulala. And from there, I go to Clermont-Ferrand to hike up a volcano. I'll be visiting the lot department to explore gorgeous medieval villages and sort of have a holiday. We're sort of a holiday, not really work and a holiday, at a gorgeous 16th century holiday home called the Moulin-sur-Seille, which is near lovely Cahors. And then in May, I go to Cognac for a short break. And then maybe a cruise on the Burgundy Canal. I'm not sure. Thinking about that, I might pop to the Gers, Paris, Dordogne. I have to say, I go everywhere by train, and I'll be talking about that later.
That sounds amazing. But you know, in France, you will never run out of things to see and places to visit. World-class art, magnificent architecture, more than 40,000 chateaux and fortresses, glorious beaches, snowy mountains, historic cities, picturesque villages. There is just so much to fall in love with.
It's true. It really is. And, you know, when you've ticked off all those big must-see sites off your list, like the Palace of Versailles, Mont-Saint-Michel in Normandy, which is a dazzling little island and makes you feel like you've stepped back centuries in time, the Louvre, which is the world's most visited museum, the sun-kissed French Riviera, the boulevards of Paris, the majestic castles of the Loire Valley. I mean, oh, it's just so much. And then there are a million more thrilling sites and places to discover. Prehistoric caves, troglodyte villages, the steep cobbled streets of Saint-Emilion in Bordeaux, the medieval town of Annecy in Haute-Savoie, Claude Monet's house and garden in Giverny, Normandy. But let's talk about how you're going to get there.
Yeah, that's a good idea. It's important. The French usually travel en voiture, by car, mostly. Between the middle of July and the middle of August, the roads are considerably busier than usual, as this is a prime time for French holidaymakers to get away as well as peak tourist season. There's even a website called Bison Futé, which monitors and reports on how busy the roads are.
If you ever drive in France, you'll notice that the French are obsessed with roundabouts, carousels. It's a whopping 30% of all the traffic roundabouts in the world are to be found on the roads of France. My very first one in the world was at the Place de l'Étoile, Star Square, now called Place Charles de Gaulle, which sits on the historic Arc de Triomphe, spreads all around it. And it was commissioned, the Arc, in 1806 by Napoleon Bonaparte. But now there are a rather nightmarish 12 boulevards that converge here. And it's said that if you're involved in an accident driving round the circle, insurance companies split the cost 50-50, as each driver is considered at fault. Allegedly, it's the only place in the city where an accident is never judged.
This is definitely true. The roads are generally very good in France. Autoroutes and toll roads speed you across the country. In fact, we are so fond of our autoroutes, we give them nicknames. The A6, which runs from Paris to Lyon, where I live, is called the Autoroute du Soleil, the Sun Motorway, because you're heading for the sunny bit of France, in the south, obviously. And the A26, which runs from Calais in the north to Troyes in Champagne, is called the Autoroute des Anglais, the motorway of the English, because millions of people every year travel from the UK by ferry and train in their cars and head south from Calais.
They do, and it's a bad mistake, a very bad mistake. I live 1 hour from Calais port, and it's glorious. It's like the Dordogne. It's green and lush and hilly, but we have the seaside too, the beautiful opal coast, which the painter J.M. Turner loved to capture on canvas, and Charles Dickens wrote about it. He lived here for many years. It's a really beautiful, authentic, you know, friendly part of France. And I'm not saying that just because I live here. It really is.
It is, yeah, I agree. You know what they say about people in the north? They have the sun in their heart. But back to those roads, road travel then is easy in France. And it's not just the motorways. The country lanes are rarely busy. And sometimes you really need a car to get to see places where there is no public transport.
Which brings us rather neatly to rail travel, which is my preferred mode of getting around. Actually, not a very good driver, it has to be said. Can drive, but I prefer the train. So in France, we have the state-owned rail network, SNCF, the Société Nationale des Chemins de Fer, which makes travel across parts of France very easy. And travel via the TGV, the Train à Grande Vitesse trains, which travel at speeds of up to 320 kilometres per hour and connect Paris to every region. So these trains, they whisk you across France. You can do Paris to Bordeaux in just 2 hours. You can do Paris to Marseille in less than 3.5 hours. I find that astonishing.
Funny fact about TGV, Janine. the first or one of the first logos of the TGV, when you pull it upside down, it was a snail.
Do you think they did that deliberately?
I don't know, but it was very funny.
We don't have the TGV where I live. And in fact, in rural areas, public transport can be a bit more of a challenge, to be honest. So here in my part of France, the nearest station for me is about a 30-minute drive away. And that's quite normal in rural areas to be 30 minutes or maybe even more away. Fast trains are not an option. Instead, the services are provided by TER, Transport Express Régional. Do you like my French accent? Oh, I'm getting better at this, aren't I?
I love it.
Or we have Corail trains, which tend to be older and slower. It takes me 2.5 hours at the very quickest to get to Paris, which is just 240 kilometres away, compared to the fast train from Paris to Bordeaux, which is around 600 kilometres away and takes only 2 hours. So the fast train services to stations in the main cities in all the departments of France then connect to slower trains. And when it comes to buying tickets for the trains, there are a few things you should know.
Exactly. The earlier you buy your ticket for TGV trains or intercity trains before you need to travel, the cheaper it will be. But often tickets are not on sale more than 4 months before the travel date. And the price difference can be huge. You can pay 6 times more on the day than you would have paid if you booked in advance.
That's absolutely true. I got a ticket to Paris and I had to go on the day. Normally I would book in advance. It cost me 25 euros. And booking and going to the train station and buying the day cost me 60 euros to go to Paris. Yeah. You can buy train tickets through SNCF online or their app or through other companies like Trainline, that sort of thing. Or you can go in person to the ticket office. Some stations do have ticket offices, but don't rely on it because often they're closed and smaller stations don't have them. And a lot of the bigger stations in cities have big SNCF sales offices, but in my experience, there are always horrendous queues. Now, once you have your ticket, if you've got a paper ticket, you didn't download it online, you've got this like thin oblong shaped ticket, you have to compost it before you get on the train. The first time I got a train on my own and the ticket collector came round to check the ticket and he said to me, why haven't you not composted your ticket? And I was flabbergasted. I was like, I haven't even used it, let alone put it in the compost bin. But it's not about recycling. It's about time stamping your ticket, which is called composting. And there are little yellow machines at the entry to the platform areas and you push your ticket into a slot and it stamps it. And it's weird, yes, but true.
Very important to always leave plenty of time to get on your train. Often they are very long. You will be assigned a seat in advance and your carriage could be a long walk down the platform. Sometimes trains split into two and go different ways. So always get in the right carriage. Otherwise, you will end up somewhere you don't want to go to. And sometimes you have to have your ticket scanned, which can cause queues as well. You can also track your train times through the SNCF app. No, we're not working for them at all, but it can make it easier for you to travel. The app will show your platform number and if there are any delays, for instance.
On the whole, I really love traveling by train. I know to some people, it seems like there's strikes almost non-stop when you read the news. But in 12 years of train travel in France, and that's pretty much every month, I don't know how many hundreds and hundreds of journeys I've done, I've only ever been caught up in strike issues twice. So it's not that bad, really. The people that work on the trains really do take pride in their jobs. They wear a smart uniform, they're really helpful, and the trains are super clean and comfortable. I really love that jingle that they play at all the French train stations when they're announcing a train departure or arrival. It's iconic, and mostly I just get that frisson of excitement you get when you're travelling when I hear it, unless they're announcing a delay or cancellation, and then it's like the ringtone of doom.
I like it too.
I'm going to be hearing that next week. Yay!
Yes. Everyone who has ever traveled on a French train knows that tune anyway. And you can also cycle across France. Cycling is a national sport in our country. After all, this is the country that invented the Tour de France, of course. And you often spot lycra-clad enthusiasts or a whole raft of cyclists hogging the road. There are numerous dedicated cycle routes and voies vertes greenways, which are traffic-free, the French part of La Scandibérique, which runs from Norway to Spain, is known as Eurovélo 3, and runs for 1,700 kilometers through France from the Belgian border in the far north, through Paris and the Loire Valley through to the Pays Basque in the far south.
I'd love to do that one day. It would take me weeks to do that on a bike, lots of stops. But there are also bus services, which often run from outside major train stations, which are called gare routière. So if you're ever looking for the bus from a train station, look for the gare routière. It's a bit misleading for me. Well, was at first anyway. Now, often there are boards up in the stations giving details of bus departures and arrivals. It's not like the buses in Paris, which you hop on and off of with your bus pass, which you can buy at stations and tabacs, by the way. But the buses, you book them just like trains, so you can book them online as well.
So we've done trains and automobile, now planes. Last year, France banned short-haul domestic flights. Now, any journey that you can take by train in 2.5 hours can be taken as a flight, for instance. Paris-Bordeaux, Paris-Lyon and Paris-Nantes. But you can take a flight from Paris to Marseille.
Yeah, because just a little bit longer than 2.5 hours. But actually, the train journey is quite pleasant. You don't have to get there so early in advance. You don't have to queue up and put your luggage in or anything. And you saying that reminds me about a story I read in the papers last year about air taxis. And there were loads of reports that for the 2024 Paris Olympics, they were going to introduce electric air taxis that would help to get people from one venue to another. But the trouble is, they can only carry one passenger at a time. So I think they came to the conclusion that it's not quite ready. It's not quite where it needs to be. But I've heard that this is a bit of gossip. I heard that there's this disagreement between the various authorities. And some say it's absurd, you know, it's ridiculous. And others want to support the effort with funding. But the thing is, it's going to cost two or three times at least more than a normal taxi and a way more than the metro. I don't know, would you use it, Ollie, an air taxi?
Well, I'm not sure. It's like a tiny helicopter, right, that goes up and down vertically. Maybe yeah. One day, but for now, I will take the metro, you know, the Paris underground trains. Safer, I think. Did you know that Metro Line 1 was opened in 1900 and the line linked Porte Maillot to the Porte de Vincennes, where the Olympics already at the time were held that year? Now the Paris Metro runs all over Paris and out to the suburbs as well, of course, and many major cities have metro systems as well as buses, trains and trams.
Do you know it was originally called the Compagnie du Chemin de Fer Métropolitain de Paris? That's a bit of a mouthful. The Paris Metropolitan Railway Company, which gradually shortened down to Metro. And the Metro also has its own jingle, which is played for announcements. Quite funky.
There it is. There are 304 stations in Paris, 16 lines, and it's growing. Four more metro lines are currently being dug out. It's said that in central Paris, you are never more than 500 meters from a metro station. It looks like it's definitely true, yeah. And it takes around 60 seconds to go by metro from one station to another.
That's absolutely true, because quite often I time it. I'm a bit sad, really. I like to count things. But when I'm on a metro and I'm going from Gare du Nord, say, to Montparnasse or something, I love to count how long it takes between stations. And it is actually around about 1 minute on average. Now, the deepest metro station in Paris is at Abbesse, at the bottom of Montmartre. And I once walked up the stairs there, which nearly gave me a heart attack. It's 118 feet underground, and there are 285 steps which wind around this like enormous spiral staircase. But you can take the lift, and I do recommend it, frankly, especially if you've got to walk up to Montmartre afterwards. At the entrance to the station is a stunning glass cover. I mean, it's worth going to the station just to see the entrance. It was created by architect Hector Guimard. He designed many of the iconic entrances between 1900 and 1913, and they're still there. They're so beautiful.
Another fun fact, it's said that the Paris Metro covers 600,000 miles a day, the equivalent of 10 times around the world.
Wow, that's huge.
That's a lot.
You actually, you often see the Paris Metro featured in films like Midnight in Paris, love that film, for instance, or The Da Vinci Code. But when you see that the metro on the films, it might not all be what it seems, because at the Porte de Lila metro station, which is not far from Père Lachaise Cemetery, which we told you about in our Paris Uncovered episode, there is an unused platform, which is often rented out to film companies, along with a train and a driver. So if you're in Paris on the third weekend of September each year, which is when the Jour de Patrimoine takes place, where they open up things that are often closed to the public, you can actually go and visit the film set.
Many stations are named after the street above, the neighborhood, or famous people, presidents like Charles de Gaulle and Franklin D. Roosevelt. No Boris Johnson station, though, yet. Saints, writers as well, but some have some unusual names, like Métro Blanche. The name refers to the white dust that covered horses from carts carrying plaster from the carriers near Montmartre.
There is also a metro station called Bonne Nouvelle, which means good news, named after a local church. Honestly, it always makes me laugh to think that, you know, when you're on board and they make the announcement about the next stop, they're going to say, the next station is good news.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
It makes me laugh.
And some stations are really fascinating. Ars et Métier, for instance, on line 11, is kitted out like Captain Nemo's copper submarine. And at the Louvre Metro, there are replica treasures from the museum. And many stations have artistic tiled walls and frescoes as well.
Oh, I love that. I love that Captain Nemo submarine one. It's all shiny and coppered and, you know, oh, got like fake windows. Really clever. But now let's talk about water. So another way to travel in France is by boat. You can take a river and canal cruise in France. You can travel by boat to the Mediterranean, across the Mediterranean Sea, rather, to Corsica. And then there's Paris with its river taxi service and cruises. And France is just a land of rivers. So boat travel plays a really big part even to this day. In the old days, when goods were often transported by boat, canals were created, and they are fabulous for holidays on barges. There are often boat bridges still in use. I went on one near Rouen last year when I was at the Rouen Armada. All about tall ships, fantastic event if you ever get to go to that. It's held every 4 years. And you actually drive your car onto a floating platform on one side of the river, and then it's pulled across to the other side. So boat travel is really big in France still. And it's not just about how you get from A to B when you're traveling in France. There is such a diverse landscape, so many pleasures to experience. You can travel from the sea to the mountains. You can discover France in diverse ways, from sailing on the Seine, on a cruise from Honfleur to Paris, like the Normans did in the Middle Ages, or you can explore the canals of Burgundy and Provence, cycle past fields of smiling sunflowers and aromatic lavender, whiz through glorious countryside from city to city by train, drive empty rural roads or speedy autoroutes. It's really easy to get around and visit the many sites that have shaped the history of France.
And if you want to travel the French way, here are some of our top tips. Visit the local markets. Many have tables and chairs set up where you can try your local products or have a picnic. Why not?
And don't check your work email while you're on holiday. Switch off, relax, and recharge your inner batteries.
And lastly, pack a light raincoat. Even if you're going to the south of France in the summer, it's not unknown for it to rain. So we hope you enjoyed the travel feature. And if you'd like more ideas about where to travel to, we've got loads of episodes that will inspire you, I'm sure. But now, it's time for a listener's question. Got a question about France? Well, ask the experts. We reply to you in each episode. And we do it for free. In every episode of this podcast, we answer one of your questions, and we don't mind at all what you ask us. Let's find out what today's question is, Janine.
Today's question is from Sarah Tatty of Ohio, USA. She wants to know, do the French make New Year's resolutions? So, Ollie, you're French. Do you make New Year's resolutions?
Well, yes, actually, I do, and it's a common thing to do in France. The newspapers and magazines are full of helpful tips, you know, for those whose New Year's resolutions include losing weight, doing more exercise, the usual thing, really. Do you have any New Year resolutions, Janine, yourself?
Around here, where I am, my neighbours say bon intentions, you know, good intentions, rather than bon resolutions. They intend to do better, but I think it implies an element of flexibility, which I like quite a bit more. So I have bon intentions, good intentions, like eating less cake this year, but I'm already prepared to fail. What about you?
Well, my bonnes intentions or bonnes résolutions are usually always the same year after year, exercising more. And year after year, I fell miserably, keeping them. At one point, I should try something else, I think. Eating more chocolate sounds like an easier one to keep, for example.
I think I might join you with that one.
Yeah, we'll try that this year. So thanks so much for that question, Laura. If you also have a question for us, feel free to send it to janine@thegoodlifefriends.com, janine@thegoodlifefriends.com, or via our podcast newsletter. And if there is a topic you want to know more about, let us know. This is the Good Life France podcast. Oh là là, le podcast The Good Life France. Thank you, a huge merci beaucoup to everyone for listening to our podcast from all around the world. And as usual, an enormous thank you for sharing the podcast with your friends and family. We are truly grateful when you do that. You've been listening to Janine Marsh and me, Olivier Geoffrey. You can find me at parischanson.fr.
And you can find me and heaps of information about France, where to visit, culture, history, recipes, everything to do with France at thegoodlifefrance.com, where you can subscribe to the podcast, my weekly newsletter about France, and our totally brilliant, totally free magazine, which you can read at magazine.thegoodlifefrance.com. But for now, it's au revoir from me.
And goodbye from me.
Speak to you soon.
The Good Life France podcast. Available on all podcast platforms, on thegoodlifefrance.com and on parischanson.fr. The most beautiful French songs of the 40s, 50s and 60s, only on Paris Chanson. Available on your mobile, smart TV, computer and smart speaker 24/7. Visit parischanson.fr to find out more. That's parischanson.fr.